case of Brigadier General Jeffrey Sinclair will get a verdict this week, the end of an odyssey of success, pride, romance, violence, and concealment in what has been described as a culture of tolerance for sexual misconduct in the U.S. military. At the center of the case is an ambitious General Sinclair, a 27-year Army veteran, and the equally ambitious former mistress and ambitious Army captain. How does this case take us into the center of the military's culture at a moment when calls for reform on sexual abuse cases may make the Sinclair case the last of its kind in our era? Joining us is attorney, prosecutor, and former civilian consultant for the Army, Roger Caniff, who's been part of the prosecution team in numerous military sexual assault cases. Roger, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
How did the lead up to the Sinclair case put in play or depict what goes on in the military in these kinds of cases, the looking the other way, the chain of command vetoing attempts by attorneys to actually bring cases into court?
It's an extremely unusual case because the accused is such a high-ranking official. You know, misconduct at that level, or at least misconduct that's detected, is very, very rare. So I think it's difficult to compare the Sinclair case to almost any other case that's out there. I do think it's emblematic in terms of, you know, kind of a sense of entitlement that some higher ranking individuals have. And I think it's emblematic of the fact that, you know, somebody like Sinclair feels that he pretty much is all powerful, can get away with just about anything. And I'm sure he was quite surprised that the individual who accused him actually came forward and was willing to express anything to anyone.
The reluctance of his accuser, though, that's very comparable to the kinds of problems that occur all the time in the military in these sorts of cases.
Yes, that's true. And I think there are several reasons for that. I mean, I think generally in military culture, you don't have the sense of individualism that you have in the civilian world. So military personnel are expected to have unflagging enthusiasm. They're expected not to complain. They're expected to sort of keep a stiff upper lip. So even if a person feels wronged, even if they feel as if they've been sexually assaulted, it's not official, of course, but I think there's a sense that, hey, I really don't want to tell anybody about this because if I do, I'm going to be upsetting the apple cart. I'm going to be shaking things up. I'm going to be interrupting the mission. And I think there's just a sense of duty with a lot of military folks that they just don't feel that it's a good idea. They'd prefer to just sort of keep it inside and heal internally if they can.
Isn't it the case that a relationship between two officers violates regulations on some level? Doesn't that constitute fraternization?
Technically, fraternization is between an officer and an enlisted person. The real crime here was adultery because General Sinclair was married. So that was actually the issue. Adultery was the issue more than fraternization.
In this case, a turning point was reached, and suddenly a much a relationship gone bad was played out very, very publicly within the senior levels of the Pentagon. What sort of ripple effect does that have through the chain of command in terms of future behavior, be it generals, be it captains, be it people who are considering these kinds of relationships? Cases of lawyers who will take these kinds of cases in the future. What's the ripple effect?
Well, hopefully the ripple effect is a positive one in that, you know, individuals, particularly at Sinclair's level, will understand that that's just behavior that won't be tolerated. The military has always been very serious about punishing adultery, much more serious, obviously, than in the civilian world. And the rationale is that adultery within the ranks tears at the fabric that keeps the military cohesive and cooperative and moving forward. I think Sinclair is just a very toxic person who, you know, took advantage of a situation. He had a tremendous amount of power over this captain. I mean, the power relationship between a general officer and a young captain is really remarkable. And I know that there are plenty of people and plenty of people in the media who are sort of casting these characters as kind of equal players in a romance gone bad. I don't believe that to be the case. I am familiar with the prosecution team in this case, very familiar with them, actually, and I know that the core prosecution team has never wavered and very, very much believe the account that the alleged victim in this case gave. So, you know, in addition to just the wrongfulness of initiating an adulterous relationship with a young officer, which Sinclair clearly did, I believe that he also committed very, very serious crimes against her. So regardless of the fact that he won't stand convicted of those, I do hope that the ripple effect is one that discourages any kind of behavior anywhere near what he's done.
Well, he won't be convicted of those because he pleaded to lesser charges. How does the plea strategy here relate to that culture of tolerance within the Department of the Army or the military generally?
Well, I'm not sure how it relates to it. I mean, I think in this particular case, what I understand from the prosecution team is that the victim actually never wanted to see General Sinclair have to register as a sex offender, which he would have had to do had he pled to or been found guilty of any of the more serious sex charges that were before him. Plus, I think the process had just exhausted her to the point where when the prosecution team discussed with her, hey, we have the possibility of a plea here, what do you think? She was okay with it simply because she just needs to move on with her life. You know, how does that relate to how these cases play out? There's always pressure to resolve cases in the civilian world as well as the military world. And I also think that given this case, when you have an individual as high ranking as General Sinclair, I think there's even more pressure to resolve the case and just get it behind everybody. It's very, very difficult to try a senior officer. You need a military jury, which is called a panel. You need a panel of people who are at least of equal rank to him. It's just a logistical nightmare to try cases like this. So I think that there was probably a fair amount of desire on both sides to resolve the case somehow in a just way, and I think this is the way that was determined to be ultimately best for everybody in the end.
Finally, Roger, kind of a touchy subject. Are there lessons here for this captain, for a woman officer in her situation, and a possible fix that would ease disclosure for an accuser like this going forward?
I think the woman at the center of this case was victimized. That is simply my personal belief. I'm not speaking for the Army or for anybody else. I think that she has a valid complaint. I don't think justice was done in her case, and I think it's unfortunate. I don't blame anybody for it. I think the prosecution team did their level best. I think the defense did what it needed to do, what its duty. In terms of going forward, you know, clearly everyone is well advised in the military to avoid, you know, these kind of romantic situations. But a romantic situation and some unfortunate judgment is one thing, but being sexually victimized by a very powerful man is another.
Roger Caniff is attorney, prosecutor, and a former civilian consultant for the U.S. Army. Thanks so much, Roger.
Thank you, sir.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.